If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too
Welcome
can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life.
My guest is Carmen DeVales. Very interesting individual. She's a mixed media visual artist, inspiring audiences around the world with humor and a compassionate way of telling stories with images. During her 40-year nursing career, she worked with thousands of people seeking meaning and connection during challenging times and continues to do so with her camera. She is an international speaker, inspiring audiences using photography and storytelling, and is an award-winning author of Just See Me-Sacred Stories from the Other Side of Dementia. Carmen is also an Alzheimer's / dementia advocate and founder of Doggies for Dementia Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation using photography to capture family memories and raise awareness for Alzheimer's disease and related dementia. Doggies for Dementia has been featured on both NBC and ABC. Please help me welcome Carmen DeVales. Carmen, how are you?
Hi, good, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. How have you been?
Thank you. Great. Thank
Wonderful.
You. It's Carmen, by the way.
Carmen, what did I say?
Yeah.
Carmine. Oh, yeah. I apologize
so
for that. But I did have a very good friend whose name was Carmine. So mm-hmm. I apologize for that. But Carmen, like
That's
Carmen
okay.
San Diego, I guess, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. You can tell I have kids.
That's a good question. Where is Carmen?
Yeah.
Because I travel a lot.
Where in the world is Carmen San Diego?
mm-hmm.
So, yeah. As you know, the name of the podcast is Whispers and Bricks. And the whispers are those voices telling you what the right thing to do in life is. And they represent the good in life. And the bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. And let's be real, everybody has a brick thrown at them once in a while, some more, some less, some bigger, some smaller. But we all go through things. All right. And the interesting thing is that very often we think to ourselves that when we're going through something, that we're the only ones going through that situation. And that's why I started this podcast in the first place, to let people know that they're not the only ones going through, and there are others going through, and there are others who have succeeded in breaking through. Now, you had an interesting life. You were a nurse practitioner, right?
Yeah.
But I think your life changed when you met a couple who came into the clinic when the wife at a young age had dementia.
Yes. Yes, correct. Yeah.
Can you tell us about that? Tell us what was going on.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was rather a magical day for me. I'll just say that. So yeah, 40 years as a nurse. And so I'm getting kind of close to 60 at the time this happened. And I was working in a clinic, neurology, which is for specialty in dementia, Alzheimer's. And a couple came in, they had scheduled kind of last minute. It was a husband and wife. And the wife had early onset Alzheimer's disease, meaning that her stage was early. However, she was young. She was in her late 50s, I believe. So the onset for her was younger than most. I mean, we think of Alzheimer's disease affecting mostly the elderly, but there are many people who are in their 40s, 50s, and even early 60s. And so I wasn't sure why they had come back in. And when I entered the room, they were crying really hard. And I just like all the things that go through my mind, what could this be? And they totally took me by surprise because what they had said was, first they prefaced it with, I know you're not going to do this. I know you're not going to do this because it's too early. But the woman with Alzheimer's said, I want to interview hospice so that when it comes to that time for me, which mind you could be years ahead, but when it comes to that time for me, I don't want my husband to have to do this by himself. And I know I'm not going to be able to help him. And it struck me as one of perhaps the most beautiful displays of love and compassion, as they're both hugging each other and crying and dreading this horrible day that she might need hospice care or essentially running toward the end of her life. but she wanted to ease his burden and ease his pain, knowing she will be there physically, but not be there emotionally to help him with that. And it was an epiphany for me, because I had been thinking all along and meeting with families, and I was very fortunate in that the group I worked for just kind of gave me, if you need 30 minutes, if you need 45 minutes, whatever you need to talk to the families and to support them, go ahead, which is like crazy. It's like unheard of in the medical field, right? For nurse practitioner. And we didn't have a lot of medicines to offer or hope of a cure, but we had our presence, and they allowed me to use that to the best of my ability. And I just kept thinking, somebody needs to tell these stories. Somebody needs to tell these stories. And this day and that couple, it just hit me like, you need to tell these stories. They're not capable right now, but others need to hear this.
And so you decided to step up to the plate and say, you know what, somebody's got to write it. And I don't see anybody around here that will. So I guess I'm going to do it now. Yeah. But it was like, it wasn't right away about writing the stories. It was first you started photographing people. Is that not the case? Which actually in turn led you to write a book.
Yeah, kind of. My first thought was, I need to tell these stories. I need to write this book. And I am not a writer or an author. I'd written a few professional papers, but in no way knew about writing a book. But I had this feeling so strong, the drawing, the compelling need to do it. But I couldn't imagine doing it without the photos. And I was an amateur photographer for sure. I'd never even taken a class, but somehow, like, I thought I could write a book. I thought, yeah, I could do these portraits too. And it just has to happen. We have to tell this. We have to tell the full story and show the images. And of course, this time of one's life when they have Alzheimer's disease and the family, that's not the first thing they think of. Hey, let's document this in photos, you know. And so I knew it was kind of an out of the box thought. At the same time, it was this calling for me that I just could not ignore.
And that ultimately led to, as I read from your bio, Doggies, what was it called?
Yeah, Doggies for Dementia. Yeah, so Just See Me, the book. So I followed about 13 families for about, and it ended up being about 2.5 years, almost three, because my naive self, thinking I could write a book, thought 6 months, this will be done, this will be great. And of course, it took a lot longer, which was a blessing, Ari, because I got to know the families I met with much better, because I would be there for birthdays and I would be invited for holidays and for special things. And a lot changed during those 2.5 years, which made the stories even more beautiful and more full. And I said, you know, I would like to post these pictures and tell these stories on social media. Let's raise awareness, because one of the few common themes of the stories were the isolation and the loneliness people felt, and abandonment by other family and friends, and just felt like people did not understand them and what they were going through. I'm like, hey, well, let's share these stories. Let's talk about it. And so I started posting it on social media to raise awareness actually it was a way of honoring them and their stories. And the photos, and what I found was the photos that included the family dogs, which I was always happy to do. I'm a dog lover. They were more candid and more, they were more fun, and it showed more personality. And those were the most popular ones. And popularity equated to people actually reading the stories and falling in love with the families the way I did, and having those feelings of compassion and awe for their challenges and their triumphs. And so Doggies for Dementia, I said, well, what do we do then for to meet people is to include dogs.
Wow. Now, when did Doggies for Dementia actually start?
Well, I started it. So as a, I kind of retired from the nurse practitioner world, loved photography. During this time, I thought, you know, I love photography and I love photographing and telling the stories through the images. And I essentially retired from my career and started doing portrait photography. So photographing a variety of situations and people, and just practiced and practiced and learned and took classes. And I'm pretty sure I could have a master's in it by now after how much work and time and effort, but I loved it so much. And so my business, Carmen's Legacy Productions, I photograph the families with Alzheimer's and those to telling their stories, but I did not charge them for that. That was a piece I gave to them. Right. And then I eventually people were saying, you know, Carmen, that sounds and it looks like a nonprofit. You probably need to separate that and make it a nonprofit so that you could do more with it. Versus being a part of your for-profit business that you're not charging for. And so that was officially was March of 2020, which of course we all know what happened then. But I'd been doing it for a couple of years by then.
Okay. So, yeah. And that leads to my next question, because I wanted to ask you, and the reason I asked you when did it start was because obviously we did go into COVID. And my question is basically, how did it affect you? How did it affect your clients? And how did it affect your business?
Yeah. Oh, boy. So what a loaded question, Ari. Thank you for that. Yeah. So you asked me first, how did it affect me? Being I photograph people and I'm with people and also are very vulnerable people with Alzheimer's and the elderly, I really couldn't do my business in that sense at all. I was out there photographing what was happening but as part of that storytelling, but it's not an income earning. And also during that time, in fact, a year ago around this time that we're talking today, I was diagnosed with cancer during this pandemic time. And so I couldn't be around my friends and family. And I lived alone at the time. And I had I thought I understood things pretty well, what it was like to feel isolated and lonely and people don't understand. But certainly during that time, I got a really good firsthand view of that, and also being hospitalized without any visitors allowed, and everybody's wearing a mask, and I'm being told I have cancer. So that was a rough time, which I've recovered from completely. So I'm really grateful for that.
So that was quite a brick that you basically got hit with. No, it's bad enough that you contract the cancer. But to do it during the COVID pandemic, where, you know, you're literally all alone, but it did help you. Okay. You did hear some of the whispers because you started to understand what others were going through. In other words, it's one thing to see it. It's one thing to be in it. And you saw it initially, but then you were actually in it. And I'm sure it just changed your whole, it must have changed your whole perspective on this. Correct.
It did. And you know, before surgery and treatment and all, I needed to go through all these screening tests, and screening tests themselves aren't a big deal. Right. But they're scary, wondering what's it going to show. And I remember laying there and they're going to do this CAT scan and the gals are putting in the IV and they're talking and they said, so this is, you're having some pain or something like that. And I said, no, I have uterine cancer. And they literally took a step back and all the chatting that had happened before and the small talk, it was just silence. I know I cannot read their minds. I don't know if they were feeling like, oh, I should have read that, or we should have known, or what the thought was. But that feeling when those with Alzheimer's would say, as soon as I tell somebody, and families, like, they literally will back away. They did literally take a step back. The same thing happened to me. Mm-hmm. And the feeling that I had at that moment, I mean, tears were just coming down my eyes, not just because of what was happening and I was alone, but because of the response. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they were doing the best they could, and it was their response that didn't realize it. But it was profound to me. I mean, it's 2 years to around this time, and around this time of year, it's like it kind of comes back to me what that was really like, which is not a totally bad thing, because it reminds me of just how, I know blessed is used a lot, but just how grateful and blessed I feel to have people around and to be healthy. And that was a one-time situation for me, which is different than for people with dementia. You know, it goes on.
Right. Yeah. Right. But it's, you know, and your reactions around the anniversary of whatever, you know, whatever you were going through, you're no different than I think most people who have gone through something. I mean, I get a little depressed sometimes around 9/11. I get, you know, a little antsy. I get, you know, I want to, you know, just stay to myself sometimes, just go away and just walk by myself. So we all have a way of coping with the anniversaries. All right. But as long as we don't let it, you know, destroy us, you know, but let it help us, you know, it helps to make us stronger. All right. And that's the key. That's what's so important. But let me ask you this, at any point in time, in during your career or whatever, did you ever reach a point so low where you said to yourself, you know what, I give up, I can't do this anymore, it's just I can't, for whatever reason, you know, I just want to curl up into a ball and die, you know? but if you did reach a point that low, obviously you've come out of it, you've come back, you've made a great comeback. And how did you do that?
Well, I'll talk about my second career then, the photography and author and such with doggies. So during the time of this, COVID time, and not being able to photograph the families like we have set out to do, like our mission, mm-hmm. is, the other piece, I really felt like, oh, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? And we're a nonprofit, so we rely on donations and sponsorships and things when we're not able to do the work that we set out to do. And I thought, well, I really kind of went back to what we were talking about, the feelings of that isolation and loneliness. And I did a search about isolation, and there's Caregivers for Compromise. It was a group that were primarily, but not only, but many families whose loved ones had dementia and were and they were all in some kind of a long-term care where they were locked out and not able to visit, not able to see their loved ones. And the more I read, the more I heard their stories of their watching their loved ones decline, where they don't recognize them anymore and they can see them through the windows. And they're wondering, with good reason, is there protection, meaning locking the doors and not letting people in, worth the result, which is people declining rapidly and not knowing their families and feeling like what, and they'd look through the window and go, what did I do wrong? Why am I in jail? Why don't you come see me? And heartbreaking. And they couldn't come in. They couldn't hug them. They couldn't see them. And some wrote how they were invited in to see their loved one only in like the last hour of their lives, when they felt like it was 1 hour. And it flabbergasted me. I mean, I knew times were tough, but I didn't ever think about it from that perspective. And so I started reaching out. I said, I'd love to tell your story. Tell me your story. And let's part of raising awareness, because this is a current event in our country. And while I can't photograph your loved one, I can tell your story. And so we built a YouTube channel and in a podcast sharing stories of, it's called Experts Dig In with Doggies for Dementia. And those are the family expert stories. What is that like? And then I talked to professional caregivers and psychologists, and like, what, we're in a crisis here. We haven't been in a situation like this before. We don't know what's the best thing, but we're watching people die in front of us. What else can be done? And that was our raising awareness, which really helped mold our mission even stronger. And we adapted till we could get out again. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Who is the one person that you can point to that you would say had the most influence on your life, and why?
Yeah. You know, I know you say one person. I think about if I lump it into the families that I've worked with, it seems almost like a luxury type thing. You have a photo shoot, you get some video of your loved one talking and conversing with you, and then you get these prints, and then they're honored, and you know, it is, and I thought that's really a beautiful thing, until I attended a few memorials and funerals, and I was there, and people would know who I was before I even opened my mouth. People I never met, because it was that profound and that important to them. And it is something that they would keep forever. And when I'm having hard days here at my desk by myself in my sweats and ponytails, thinking, what am I going to do? How are we going to do this? I think about them, and I think about how important isn't even the word, it's so much more than that, profound for them. And they describe it as, you know, this, precious gift and priceless to them. And that has had the most influence, because it keeps me going in spite of the challenges of a new nonprofit, which are there. They're there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something. Are you married?
I am now. I've been married almost a year in May.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
First time?
No, not the first time.
Okay.
Yeah. But he was not, I met him shortly after my cancer experience. I'll call it that. It was 2 or 3 months after. Yeah.
Do you have any kids?
Yeah. I have one son who is 35 now, and interestingly, you know, you talk about 9/11 and things. I mean, he was, I think, 11 or 12 when that happened. And it, you know, that's a very vulnerable age as well. And he, from then on, just said, I'm going to be in the Army. And I, you know, he wanted to do his part. And I just kept thinking maybe he'll grow out of it, because I was a single mom and he was my whole life. And, but he didn't. And he took his experience, and he was badly injured in war, and he took his experience and as a singer-songwriter, because he found music healing. And many of his first songs were about that experience, about the connection he felt with his Army buddies and things. And then one, he threw in what it must have been like for mom. So that was really good to hear, because it was pretty horrible for mom. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is he okay today?
He is. He has, you know, he has a head injury. He has some issues, but he's doing really well.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And he's put it to music. You know, music is such a soothing thing.
And you know, I have to say, one of the things I learned, I mean, 40 years in the clinical world, and I loved what I did, but I never felt like it was going to be it for me. I always knew there was something else, but I didn't know what it was. And I raised him. I said, look at that. You know, you might be outside the box, what you end up doing, but be open. And you just never know if your kids are listening, you know, whether they hear you or not.
Very true. Very, yeah, very true.
And when he started talking about, and he didn't even learn to play guitar till he was in Iraq. I mean, his sergeant, I think, taught him. And so when he started talking about it, I'm thinking to myself, ooh, danger, danger. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, you got to follow your heart and take those risks and do that, because I think your biggest regrets are the things you don't do, not the things you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So before we go, are there any words of wisdom that you would like to share with my audience? Something, a takeaway for my audience?
Yeah, I think we've touched on it, Ari. We talked about going through the hard times and then coming out of it, that life is kind of this up and down rocky road, if you will. And I think sometimes we have a tendency as humans that when it is good, that we don't enjoy it fully and we're not finding the joy in it because we're still worried about, well, what if, or this could happen or that could happen. And I knew, like, you know, I've heard that new moms worry so much about their newborns that they forget to enjoy the time, that they're worried about it. And I think we perpetuate that in a lot of different ways. And I would say, I mean, just find the joy and just, you know, you may have to wallow through the dark of the night at times, but find the joy and focus on that too, not just the dark night, focus on that joy also. And I've certainly learned that in working with the families with Doggies for Dementia. We find the joy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, we did mention that you did write a book. Can you tell us a little bit about the book itself? Like, what's the name of it? Where can people buy it?
Yes, yes, sure. It's called Just See Me, Sacred Stories from the Other Side of Dementia, or Just See Me. And it's available on Amazon. I believe it's on Barnes & Noble's as well. And anyone who reaches out to me and said, I'd like to have one that's autographed, I take care of that too, because I know that's kind of a special thing. And I've written and dedicated to various family members and mailed them. And I love doing that. So they can just reach out to me. So my email is Carmen, C-A-R-M-E-N @doggies4dementia.org.
Is that for the number four or F-O-R?
Yeah. So doggies, D-O-G-G-I-E-S-F-O-R dementia.
Okay. So doggies4dementia.com. Mm-hmm.
.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or if you go to the website and you say contact, I'm the one who gets that. So
okay.
That's fine too.
And the website is also
doggiesfordementia.org.
Okay. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Great. So now if people want to get in touch with you, we know how they can do that. We know where they can get the book. Mm-hmm. Well, Carmen, thank you so much for coming on the show. You've been a tremendous inspiration to me and I'm sure to my audience. Thank you so much for sharing your story. You got a lot of heart. You're a very courageous woman going through what you went through and just not giving up. I think it's absolutely amazing. So thanks so much. Keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great work. The world needs more Carmens. That's for sure. And again, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Shumber. Remember, if you feel like you're stuck in the mud, like you're spinning your wheels, wasting time in your career, your business, your life, if you know you're not enjoying all the success, satisfaction, and significance that you desire, then it's time for you to book a call with me at www.callwithari.com.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes
check out my
and subscribe
Whispers
to the show. One lucky
coaching
listener
Academy,
every single week
that
posts
time,
a review on iTunes
to the Whispers,
will win a chance in the grand
bricks,
prize drawing
never,
to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself.
Now.
Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.